It's Montel Jordan on Namibia's Heart and Soul, talking about how we do it. You should know by now how we do it on Namibia's Heart and Soul. It's especially on Fresh Breakfast. If it's not superstar, if it's not people that we all talk about, people that we gossip about, people that we either envy or we love or we look up to, every Friday we do this thing where we bring in people, okay? And today's person is one such person. Today's person is one such person who, Shekwan, I promise you, she is the definition of someone that started from the very, very, very bottom. Like, yep. I'm talking. You know when you maybe work at ShopRite to pick and pay.
Yeah.
Maybe the entry level job is like the cashier. She didn't even start by the cashier. She started by the trolleys.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. And then she graduated to the plastics, you know, when you pack the plastics.
The packer.
I said, no, let's take it back. First the cleaner. First the cleaner, then the trolley, then the packer, maybe then the cashier. And then so she built her career.
And then the supervisor, you know, the ones that come and enter the coats while those ones.
Don't forget the wigs, yeah.
Oh, wow. Why are you trying to come for a week, Bob? No.
Man, officially, right now, she's the chairperson of the Namibia Film Commission.
Yeah,
she's a filmmaker. She's a producer. She's an actor at heart. She's a fashionista. She's the true definition of an intellectual thespian. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Esther Beakers.
Hi.
Good morning, Miss Esther.
Good morning.
How are you doing today?
Good. That was such a interesting introduction. I've never heard that before.
It's a lot, hey?
Yeah.
Look, I mean that's why we say we are above average. When people come here, they experience things that they've never experienced.
That's true.
You've been around for what, like 15 years?
Maybe longer, for that matter. Yeah.
And she's telling us this is the first time she has had an introduction of that nature.
I don't
know. That's something for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So Esther, tell us, what is the one thing that you would say? How do I phrase this? Like, what's the one thing that made you feel the most grounded this week?
Oh, the one thing that made me feel the most grounded?
Yeah.
I took my shoes off and I walked outside barefoot.
And how often do we really do that as adults? Like, let's just be honest.
Yeah.
Especially like outside.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Okay, was this at home?
Yeah, it was at home.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I just took my shoes. I just took a walk, and I went into the sand. And
yeah.
Yeah. I do. I try and do that at least once a week. Just, you know, earthing.
Yeah. Yeah. I never do that. So I'm like, where are my plackies, please?
Yeah.
No,
yeah. No.
That's
my feet are also very sensitive, but I understand why you do that, because I mean, the person that you are right now, your life is probably crazy. Like, there's a lot that you have to deal with, that you have to handle, that you have to champion. You have to manage people. You have to manage organizations. Which, by the way, I just wanted to ask you, Esther, what are your different official titles? Okay, right now, chairperson, Namibia Film Commission. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Thank
you. You still with the Film Association, the Filmmakers Association of Namibia? And are there other titles that we don't know about?
That we don't know about, yeah.
Advocate, doctor, chair lady.
Not yet.
We're getting there. Okay, so currently, I obviously, like we know, I've just been appointed as the chairperson of the board of the Namibian Film Commission. So I'm a commissioner, and I'm also the chairperson of the board. And then I am also a board member on FAN, which is the Filmmakers Association of Namibia.
Okay. Yeah.
They were the ones that actually nominated me to go and sit on the NFC board. So we're doing a lot of work with FAN right now. I am the programs director. So essentially, I am responsible for any, you know, programs or things that we do as the association. And our work is to promote and support the industry and grow the industry and kind of champion some of the needs of the film industry. And then I am a producer and a director. And I have a little startup production company right now that I'm, you know, getting off the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
it's really in the early phases, and I'm still kind of trying to figure out like how, you know, to make this filmmaker thing like make sense and make us money and all of that.
And take us to the world.
Exactly.
Like, yo, yeah.
Exactly. So those are my titles, and then I'm an auntie.
Okay.
I'm a sister, and I'm a daughter, and most importantly, I'm a child of God.
That's what I'm talking about.
You know what? I'm actually curious to know right now, like in terms of your work, because you have you clearly have a lot on your plate. But what would you say is the most rewarding part of what you do?
I think the most rewarding part is watching people grow around me, like working with people that are still coming up and watching them kind of like be hungry and chase and like learn lessons and grow alongside me. I think that is like, wow, you know, because I feel like it gives me a lot of like purpose, and it gives like a lot of, it just gives a lot of purpose to the work that I'm doing. I'm a really big advocate for like leadership and like good and strong leadership. So, you know, I believe in, outside of just doing the work that we're doing, it's really important to be able to be pouring into people's lives and to see, you know, some form of like transformation while we do work.
And I'm sure you've had a couple of people that that probably even grew up around you, you know, just looking up to you, and you've been in the game for so long, and you're at a point where they probably even revert back to you for advice and so on. But let's take it back a little bit, Esther. Let's take it back a little bit. Who are you? You know what I mean? Where did you grow up, dude? Like, you know what I mean? Are you a Windhoeker, or, you know what I mean, some farm from De Seda or somewhere in Grootfontein? Talk to us about your upbringing.
I am a Vintu girly through and through.
Okay.
With the good and the bad, you whatever all of that means. I grew up in Vintu.
Which location was it?
In Hoogland Park, specifically. H Park, represent.
So Emma's a good enough.
Emma.
Yes, exactly.
I went to Emma Wagenoot, and one thing that you might not know about Emma Wagenoot is, a lot of artists actually come from Emma Wagenoot, especially from the people that grew up in Windhoek. We had like one of the best like arts and crafts teacher, Ms. Boscovich, and
Ms. Boscovich.
Yes. She was she's amazing, and she really nurtured a lot of the artists that we see today in all the multiple disciplines. She nurtured this in all of us from a very young age. So that was where I grew up.
Shout out to Ms. Boscovich, man.
She's still in my life to this day. She calls me and she'll be like, "Oh, you're doing so well." And
oh, that's a blessing.
Wait, is she still teaching?
Yes, she is still. She's at Delta Primary School now. But yeah, she's still teaching.
One of those career teachers, 30 years, 40 years.
Yeah, she's, oh my goodness, she's brilliant. You can literally ask anyone that has gone to Emma, had Ms. Boscovich.
Yeah.
They're probably an artist now. But yeah, so she's been a really big part of that.
High school,
I went to Concordia because it was like right around the corner from my house at the time, so I could like walk to school. That was a very interesting experience.
Spill the tea. Okay.
But Concordia is rough, bro. Like, I mean, like, let's just be honest, guy.
You guys were rough diamonds.
The diamonds. My gosh. Concordia was, but it was good for me because, and I think all of our kids, you should always, you know, take them out of that soft life and then go put them.
Yeah, somewhere.
Go fight for your life a little bit.
Yeah,
because I think it was a really good way for me to also get exposed to, I think, other areas of life and lifestyles. You had children that were walking so many, you know, distances to get to school and things like that. And it was just like ideas that I just hadn't like fully comprehended, that there's a life outside of like little suburbia or whatever grew up in, this really sheltered life. And I got there and I got exposed to like people from like really different backgrounds with different upbringings. And and then you just kind of start growing a sense of empathy and start understanding that, like, okay, there's more to this life thing, yeah. You know? We don't all have the same 24 hours. Mm. Other people are spending 5 hours commuting or, you know, walking or whatever. Sure. And it's just getting that. And then these people are your friends and getting into their homes and things like that. So it was just like a way that I was exposed to life in a whole different way. And that was up until grade 9. Mm. And then from grade 10 to 12, I went to Combretum. Mm. Which, by the way, seriously? Recently closed. Yeah,
it's closed.
Recently. You're dropping a lot of bombs now. Okay, you were at Combretum. Okay, yeah.
So I went to Combretum. I think, yeah, it was the last 3 years of my life. And fun fact, I was actually junior counsel. I don't know if you guys
yeah,
know.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, where, we know where all the schools, yeah, yeah, all yeah. the schools, you know, throw the best together for to represent the town or the region.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. So I was one of the junior counselors. I was the representative of Combretum in the junior council. So that was exciting.
Yes, of course.
And in that time, I was also playing hockey for the national team. I had just been selected for the under 16.
So you had your colors. What's the color again, Shikwan?
Full colors.
Okay.
Yeah. So regional teams were half colors, and then national team was full colors.
So your blazer kind of looked nice at school.
Did you guys have that?
Yeah, at Concordia as well, because I was that's actually when I first got selected on the team. So I was playing, I was very much into sports at the time. Playing hockey, which was also a very interesting experience, because I think at the time I was the only black child on the national team. And
yeah.
You're getting emails in Afrikaans.
What
is this, 2010?
I think 2009. It was really, it was a very rough time for my childhood, I think, especially because it starts reinforcing, I guess, the ideas that our parents have about, you know, race and all of these things. And now you're in it. And now you just think like, oh my gosh, these people hate me, and you know, or because we had to pay for our own tours.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
And that time, you know, you're the only child that didn't finish the payment. And
yeah, I had my white teammates pay for my trip. That's for sure.
That part, right?
Just for context, she did netball nationally.
I know that. I'm aware of that.
So we have someone on the WhatsApp line. Sorry to cut you off. Someone on the WhatsApp line saying that please say hi to Esther. We used to play hockey together, all the way from UNAM Hockey, there by Coach Handura, legend. And please ask her if she's ever going to return to hockey. Much love from Ina.
Ina! Oh my god. Okay, flashbacks, first of all. She was my national teammate. Because mind you, I had been playing up until the women's, actually. So from under 16 up until women's. Competed in like Four Nations tournaments where we were playing against Australia the USA, and it was incredible. So she was with me in the trenches. I still play hockey, but I guess just not as competitively. I just play.
So like social vibes.
Yes, but actually also in the leagues. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just university?
University? Did I? What? Where did I?
No. Because you must finish with Combretum.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I went to UNAM.
Yeah.
And
immediately after.
Yes.
Okay. Mm.
Yeah. Went straight to UNAM, did my arts diploma. I was doing the diploma in arts.
Okay.
But you know, at the time, I just wanted to go to SA, my friends and things like that. And my parents are like, "No, we can't
afford that type of thing."
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
So as much as I was at UNAM, but at the time I had started, actually, if we go back a little bit, when I was 16, I had started doing makeup for music videos.
Are you serious?
That was my introduction at to 16? Like, set. Yes.
Who, like Little D and DJ's music video?
Yeah. Because in my first music video was, I don't know if you remember, Fail, DQ Blaze.
DQ Blaze!
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my word. I was literally doing some research on her, like literally this week.
Yeah.
You did makeup for that video.
So her first music video, because I was like on the set and I was like, okay, let me help. And that was like my introduction to like being on set.
On set, yeah.
And then I started at the age of 16. So on the weekends, I would do makeup. For MBG, which was Mad Boy Genius.
Yeah.
And in
bro.
That time, they were doing all of the videos. So I did a lot of the 061 music videos. And I think that's how
this
I
is
got...
gradually throughout high school.
Throughout high school. Exactly, yeah.
That's crazy, bro.
Wow.
So I was doing, you know, all the 061 music videos with Kani and... You know,
Kitty Cat.
Yeah. I did Let's Play. I was one of the, you know, I was makeup artist there as well. So that was kind of my introduction into like the entertainment world and film in general. So when I got to university, I was already working in the industry.
Yeah,
I was exposed. So I was doing makeup for music videos. Then I'm getting calls for commercials. Can you come and do, you know, makeup, or can you do some styling?
Yeah.
Oh, because I had started a fashion blog.
Yeah, no, which was brilliant. I can't remember the name, but I remember it. Yeah.
Yeah. At the time, I think I was one of the first like fashion bloggers, me and Sean Kamati.
I mean, own it. Just FYI.
Just putting it up.
Just one of the first.
So I started my own fashion blog. It was called Don't You Wanna Gimme That? It still exists.
Mm.
It's cringe, like right now when I read the
things. Whatever you were writing.
Just like, why? But I don't think I'm ever going to take it down. I think it's important to like have
history,
that like legacy and just to see how much you've evolved.
Yeah.
And I was really into the fashion space at the time, but then I was also using that in film and television as well, because I was styling. I think there was this NAMCOL educational videos, and I was the person dressing people.
I remember those.
I was, you know, doing what else at the time? Commercials, like I had mentioned. You know, it was like gradually. So as my interest shifted, I was able to kind of transfer that into the, you know, work. But again, it was on the weekends and things. So I wasn't. Because I was doing so well in those areas, I wasn't so focused on school. But stay in school, everyone.
This
is not when you went to UNAM was now.
This is while I'm at UNAM, you know. Because I'm distracted. I'm getting work. People
getting
in
money.
I'm getting money.
And you were the superstars and stuff, bro. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Real quick, is it this song? The thing is, I really have been doing some research on
her,
DQ Blaze. Because I actually think that she's actually the first. Because I've been comparing her and Snazzy's timelines. You know what I mean? But hold on. To this song. That's the song, right?
Yep.
That's the song you see the music video for.
Yes.
Oh my goodness, Shaquan.
What's the title of the song?
Check this out. Just really grab the screen, Shaquan. Oh my word. Look at that. Look at the style and everything, bruh. This is ahead of its time. Even the beat, guy. Oh man, I swear. Because the thing is, I was doing research in the sense of
Is that Bring the Tool?
That's Bring the Tool.
Remember
the research that I was doing is, look, everyone is talking about Snazzy, right? Everyone's talking about Snazzy, but there were other cats as well, and I remember there being other kids. But hold that thought, boys and girls, young and old, non-conformant. We'll get back to this conversation in a bit. Esther Biekas is in the building. There's a shout out here from Costa as well. Costa saying big shout out to Miss Boshkovich.
I remember her.
Wow. Okay, stick around. Don't go anywhere.
We are the Consumer Brand Enthusiast.
102.9, Namibia's heart and soul. Straight to your stereo.
It's 9:33 on Namibia's heart and soul. You should know by now that when it comes to Fridays around this time, which is 9 a.m., we... your favorites, the NSK and Shaquan, always bring in personalities that we talk about, we we admire or we have questions about them. Like, who is this person in actual fact? And today is one such person, which is Esther Bier, because she's the chairperson right now of the Namibia Film Commission. But as you heard, she's been doing a lot.
Come on.
Okay,
she's
been out here.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Put respect to that name, bro.
Play.
You know what I mean? don't be like, just, because now she's the chair. Who's this person that's going to be the chairperson? No, bro. She's out here at 16 doing music videos, makeup music videos.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Wow, Esther. Mm. This is you know, this is the type of stuff that we need to know as Namibians. You know, these are the stories that we love.
Absolutely.
Tell us about Multi-Choice Talent Factory. You know,
how did that come about?
How did that come about? Did you apply? Did someone else apply on your behalf? I asked this question, funny enough, because my sister, right? Mm-hmm. She never wanted to be in the force, right? My older sister.
Oh, yes.
So it was
my
parents who applied on her behalf without her knowing. And then when the opportunity came, we forced her. Now she's like this big shot and in Erango region.
Wow.
So was it the same case with you, or did you really wanted to do this?
I didn't even know what it was about. Because fast forward, right? I was in Kenya at the time that they launched the Multi-Choice Talent Factory.
Mm.
And I had gone to Kenya for some film workshop thing, another program I was a part of.
Yeah.
And I remember I was like, okay, bye, mom and dad. I pack my bags and I'm going to Kenya for 2 weeks. I was like, I'll be back in 2 weeks. And then I get there and I'm like, I love this place. And I'm like, guys, I'm not coming home. I found an apartment.
Oh, wow.
Wow, bro.
Because I started working there and I was, I worked on a really big feature film. So while I was there, someone from Multi-Choice had reached out about this program.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're inviting you to the launch. Mm. And I'm like, what? And I reply, I'm like, what is it about? I'm in another country right now. There's no way I'm coming.
Yeah.
Because mind you, I only had one flight ticket out of Nairobi to come back home. So if I use that ticket, there's no way I'll
come back.
Yeah. The funds and everything.
Yeah.
So I was just like, tell me what it is.
The launch was in Namibia?
The Vintuk launch now, because that's who was reaching out to me. And I was like, I don't know what this is about. Like, please explain. And they're like, no, please come. You have to come to the launch. And I didn't come, obviously, because I'm in Kenya. And then, like, fast forward again, then they sent me another mail after the launch about, like, look, please apply. Someone has recommend. People have keep recommending you to apply for this program.
Yeah.
And it was Lavana, I think, at the time who had reached out.
Yeah.
And she kept saying, you know, please apply. And I'm like, what is this? I'm enjoying my new life here. So I just applied. And I applied and I get in for the interview. So like I said, I only have one ticket to go home, which I just kept like postponing the flight date.
Yeah.
And then they were like, come for the interview. But now imagine if I come for the interview and I don't get in.
And you don't get in.
I've given up. Like,
you have a whole apartment, by the way. Yeah.
So I did it. I mean, I took the risk and I came home and I did the interview and I got into the program. And then, like, the next year, I'm in Zambia.
Zambia, yeah.
Basically.
That is incredible, dude. And you guys were out in Zambia for how long? Like 2 months?
A whole year.
That's a whole year.
It's a year. And it was one of the
That is incredible.
Best experiences of my life, because for 1 year, you're getting a stipend, you're being taken care of, and all you need to do is be creative and show up to the classes and learn and create. It is the best experience, honestly, that anyone as a creative. I think if you're an artist, one of the things that I will always, always, always recommend is find a residency. Apply online. There's so many opportunities out there for artists. And where you can just go for 1 year, a lot of these residencies are structured like this. Go out for 1 year, they give you a stipend, or they take care of you, or they house you for a year. And all you have to do is create. And it gives you the opportunity to see what you're made of in an environment where there's no pressure to go pay your rent and to eat and I think it's the best way to develop yourself as an artist is to find these residencies and these programs and, apply.
Sure. How was that experience life-changing for you? Was it one of those situations where it's always been there? You probably always wanted to get into the space, but then once you went through the DSTV Multi-Choice what do you call it? Talent?
Talent Factory, yeah.
Talent Factory, yeah. Did it actually ignite something in you where you were like, you know what, this is actually what I'm called to do?
Honestly, I've been clear about my path, like even way before getting into the Talent Factory. I can't say that it solidified that necessarily.
Okay.
But it did open my eyes up into the African landscape looks like, because we were in a cohort of people from Angola, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Botswana, it was Namibia, and then obviously the Zambians. So we got to see, and you get to understand, like, oh, these are the challenges these people face, these are the challenges those people face. And you see, like, oh, this is what
this
it's
is
like.
How you can work around it. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And then the most exciting part was when we had to do projects together.
Mm.
Because you have these minds from different parts of the continent, and we're coming together and we're like creating stuff and we're working on projects. And that stirred up something inside me. And I think it gave me a passion for Africa as like the continent, and to be like, especially because as Namibia, look, we have such a small population. It's hard for us to create content really just for ourselves. So for me, it was like, it was the beginning of me coming up with like, with the wheels turning of like, okay, guys, it's not going to be sufficient just to work on our own. We need to collaborate. We need to make connections across the continent. And we need to figure out how we're going to raise these borders and just, you know, come together. So that's what it really solidified. Yeah.
I also did a little bit of traveling. And one thing that I've noticed is that the guys on the other side, they are extremely aggressive, man. Like, we're very chill this side. Talk to me about that culture shock. You know, when you went to the other side. And when you see these guys are not playing, bruh. It's a different level here.
Okay, in order to answer that question, I'm going to have to go back again.
Yeah.
Because from UNAM, I went to Cape Town. So I was studying in Cape Town.
Yes. At AFDA, right? Yeah.
So I was at AFDA for a year. And while I was at AFDA, I was also working in Cape Town. And I was doing, you know, working on different productions and stuff like that. And then I had left to Kenya, right? So these are very like liberal kind of cities and things like that. And then I moved to Zambia and it's like, it's very conservative. And you come in there with this pompous attitude of like, I know everything.
Yeah, being in it, yes.
And I was completely humbled, you know, and because I think the attitude, one of people, I think specifically like in Zambia, I think Kenya also had it a little bit, was that we don't have our government is not going to come in and save us. We have to figure it out on our own. So the mentality is different. That's why they said maybe what we perceive as this like hustle culture, because people work so hard because they know nobody's going to come and save you.
There's no
NFC, there's no film commissions, you know, it's just people that have this passion for this thing and they're just figuring it out every day. Exactly. And it's not like they're creating maybe the most highbrow content, but it is grassroots. And it is your average person, your everyday person, you know, can enjoy this, can laugh and whatnot. So, yeah, Zambia really, really opened my eyes up to the idea that, like, you have to come in with a humble attitude and learning to be respectful of the people that you're working with.
Yeah.
And, yeah, being patient.
Yeah.
Being patient. That's something that grew inside of me in that time. So that,
well, you've built this this passion that has now become a career, to the point that you are right now, you know, chair lady of the Namibia Film Commission.
Say it right.
You know what I mean? And you're still aggressive, you still want to do stuff, and you still have hopes and dreams. Your immediate dream, though, what's your immediate dream from this point onwards? What are you working on?
Wow. Okay. So I'm currently developing a TV series.
Wow.
And it's an anthology series. And what that means is basically every episode is different. Kind of like your Black Mirror.
Like Black Mirror. Yeah. That is insane. Yeah.
But the idea with this one is we want to tell a story across the continent. So, you know, kind of have it shot in different cities and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But to be fair, I'm still a long way off. Yeah. Development takes a long time. Yeah. And you need to raise money as you go along. And that's what I've been doing. That's a project that I've been pushing. Yeah, it's not easy because you're not necessarily making money in this time, right? So when you're developing, you're writing, you need to get experts to come in and give you feedback and all of these things. So, yeah, I'm very early in this process.
Okay.
But my dream is to, you know, create a show where that is shot across the continent where we collaborate with, you know, and I get to work with all of these creatives that I've met along the way, you know, and finally bring them into one room and be like, okay, guys, let's make it happen. So, yeah.
Before we let you go, Esther, in 2015, right, you went on record and you said, by the time I'm 30, Yella, I want to be the editor of a big fashion magazine like Vogue or Elle, or even start my own here in Namibia that would become big internationally. The dream has sort of kind of now, like, just, you know,
abort mission. Yeah, no, I left the fashion industry. Yes, I had to leave fashion. I think, thank you for pulling that back. I don't even remember saying that.
Yeah.
But yes, I had to step out of the fashion industry, like, officially at some point because my values were changing, obviously, as I was growing. And yeah, it just for me, I realized that this was not, like, I want to do more and I want to be able to impact people in a much more meaningful way. And I just felt with fashion that there was no, I wasn't finding that way through. Or also, like, again, because I'm maturing and I'm growing, I think I can look back at it now as like, oh, great, that was such a cool stepping stone to get me here, because I continued working, right?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Chikwan?
You know what, too? And all I'm thinking about right now is just how Esther came about, like the woman that you are today. What is the one thing that you had to let go of to make room for the Esther you are today?
Pride and ego. And I think that's something that I'm still letting go of. I think that's a practice that you have to work on every single day. You always have to check yourself, be like, am I, you know, is this my ego getting in the way? Is this my pride? And I just had to let go of selfishness and self-centeredness. And I think, again, that was a lot associated to being in the fashion space, because it's about me and what I look like. And things like that. So, I think that was.
So to anyone who's listening right now, especially the young, ambitious Black girl that also wants to take up space as much as you have taken up space, what would you leave with that person that you have inspired with your story today?
If you have ideas, do it. Execute, right? Because that's the difference between someone that is growing and someone that's not. Don't wait for it to be perfect. Don't hold on for it too long. Just start making stuff. You know, if it's with your phone, if it's this, do, and you'll make mistakes and you'll hate your work for the longest time. I still look back at my films and I'm like, oh, I don't really like this. But because you're never gonna be at the level of the artist that you admire. Not at least in the beginning. But you have to do a little bit of trash on your way to get to that place. And I think people get so scared because you don't want to release something. You know, it's very personal when you let go of your work and you present it to the public, because you get scrutinized and not everyone's, you know, people are going to hate it. But I think just do it. Just step out in faith and trust that whatever you're creating or actually already exists, you're just finding the pieces to put it together.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, young and old, non-conforming, her name is Esther Bierkes. Thank you so much for the conversation.
Thank you guys for having me. I really, really appreciate it. I'm sad to leave.
She's getting so comfortable.
We get that all the time.
We
kind of bad people, you know what I mean? Stick around. It's at 9:48 on Namibia's Heart and Soul. We've got Murumba Pitcher coming up and so much more.